First, according to our next guest, the light at the end of the COVID-19 tunnel is in sight, and it's much closer than you might think it is. The number of COVID-19 cases in the U.S. has been steadily declining for weeks now. The seven-day rolling average on January 11th was nearly 250,000. Now it's down to 64,000. So far, 65 million Americans have gotten at least the first of two COVID-19 shots, and vaccine makers say the U.S. is on track to have 3 million doses available per day by April. That's all part of the reason why our next guest wrote in the Wall Street Journal that we're on track to reach herd immunity in just a couple months. At that point, he says COVID will be mostly over and we'll be able to return to something that looks like our normal lives. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about herd immunity? Have you had COVID yourself? Have you gotten or are you planning on getting the vaccine? And how hard has the social isolation and closures and things like that been on you and people you know? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Marty McCary is a professor at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, Public Health, and Business. He's the chief medical advisor to Sesame Care and author of the New York Times bestseller, The Price We Pay, What Broke American Healthcare and How to Fix It. Dr. McCary, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Good to be with you guys.
Before we get into the current trends, Dr. McCary, I kind of want to situate your thinking on this. People might hear this and say, well, some people have been downplaying COVID all along. That's not you. About a year ago, almost a year ago today, you were saying, hey, people, this is more serious than you think it is. Talk about those early days and where we are now.
Yeah, they were scary. I mean, we were looking at case fatality rates overseas of 1 to 10%. I mean, that was scary. We didn't know the distribution by age and comorbidities. We didn't know if that meant that we were going to lose 1% of our nation's children because it appeared that, you know, the early projections from Dr. Lipsitch, who I respect and have always respected, was saying that 40 to 70% of the U.S. population could get infected. He ended up being spot on. So a group of us, a small group of doctors, went around the country recognizing that we're not hearing the sounding of the alarm from Dr. Fauci and others. We need to get out there and just speak up. And we went to the NCAA, asked them, begged them to postpone the tournament. South by Southwest, the big conference in Austin, gathers 500,000 or 250,000 people from around the world. We told them, cancel it. We did everything we could. We went to Mardi Gras. And so we were sounding the alarm for sure. Finally got on TV and the media and tried to say the same thing. Of course, all the predictions we had came true. Tragically, now we're at the half million live mark. And I think now it's, if you're a good scientist, you learn from the data. And as the data comes in, you evolve your strategy. And right now, the data are pointing to good news, if that's okay, if we're allowed to talk about good news.
I like good news. Now, we just came out of a lot of bad news in January. It was a rough month, a high average death toll. But here you are late February, and you're saying April looks pretty good. Herd immunity could be on the way with vaccines, plus all the people have already gotten that. Make that case that we could be at a functional level of herd immunity, really not that far ahead on the calendar.
Yeah, the good news is we're going to be at very low levels of infection by April or May. Herd immunity could sort of mature in either April or May, but right now the numbers I project point us towards the end of April. We're going to see very low levels of infection and be able to get back to a lot of normal things. Now, not everyone's going to want to rush out. It's been a brutal year. But I think we're going to be in a very safe place then. And that's because there's a lot more natural immunity out there from prior infection than we have appreciated as a medical community. That natural immunity works pretty well. Reinfection rates are less than 1%. And so natural immunity works well. It's still durable after a year. And now we're adding vaccinated immunity out there. And you add that together, and we're getting close to those herd numbers. As a matter of fact, herd immunity is not binary. It's not all or nothing. It's already started to kick in. Look at the 77% decline in daily cases over the last 6.5 weeks. It's remarkable. And I think we're adding about 1.8 million doses a day of vaccines. That's about 1.1 million people a day getting vaccinated. We're at 17% of the United States today. Adult population is vaccinated. So we're moving along.
Talking to Dr. Marty McCary from Johns Hopkins. He has written a piece in the Wall Street Journal saying April, end of April, is looking pretty good for a point where between vaccines and people already having gotten COVID, we could be at something that looks a lot like herd immunity. You can join in with your thoughts and questions and what this means for the way you're going to behave in the months to come at 800-642-1234. Okay, Dr. McCary, let me throw a couple yeah buts at you. This February is looking great compared to January. It's looking pretty ugly if you compare it to like last August or September. And we've got these new variants. We don't want to be too freaked out about them, but they do seem more infectious. I don't know. These seem like asterisks that people are pointing to saying, don't throw caution to the wind just yet.
Yeah, there's a lot to sift through there. So the variants pose a threat because the rate of new variants suggests that we're going to see new variants we haven't even described yet. And that could very well, in the fall, flare and create what looks to be like what might be otherwise a very bad flu season type picture. So that's possible. And the good news is we can track that like we do with flu. We predict which variant's going to be dominant here. We look at which ones are more contagious overseas, and we create a vaccine that covers multiple different variants when we give a vaccine each year. We can do that. We can do that. And so that's the plan. Right now, though, the variants are not causing a surge in the spring like some had anticipated. The tools we have are very good. The vaccines appear to be 100% effective in preventing COVID death from any variant so far. And if it's not 100%, it's near 100 if you count the one case of the death 3 weeks after a first Moderna vaccine in the UK. That is, people vaccinated have a 99%+ chance of surviving. And that's good. So this works against the variants. You don't make as many antibodies, and you're going to hear a lot of media buzz about that. You're going to get less antibodies against certain variants with the vaccine, but they still are 99%+ preventive in preventing COVID death. Plus, the countries with big variants, UK, South Africa, what's happening there right now? They're down 82 and 90% respectively in daily cases. So even countries where the variants are dominant, they've seen massive declines.
Scott Gottlieb, former FDA commissioner, speaking on CNBC on Monday, was responding to your piece in the Wall Street Journal. Doesn't necessarily agree with everything you say, but he thinks you're more or less in the right direction. I want to give a listen to his thoughts on the year to come. Here's a listen.
So this isn't going to be a linear progression over the course of the year where it gets progressively better. And then by Christmas time, it's all good. I think this is a respiratory pathogen that circulates in the wintertime. And once it becomes wintertime again in 2021, 2022, we're going to need to take certain precautions. I think if there's going to be a normal time over the next 12 months, it's likely to be this spring and summer.
And do you think this could be a case where we see, some COVID, as you're saying with the flu in the fall, some COVID this winter and maybe the winters to come, though hopefully, clearly not on the scale we just saw this last winter?
Yeah, I agree 100% with my friend, Dr. Scott Gottlieb. We are going to see COVID in the fall. And one way to misinterpret the article I wrote is to suggest that, and some people might do this, and I assumed this would be the case when I wrote it, is to think that COVID is gone forever, once we hit herd immunity. It'll be around for decades to come, as I said in the piece. So there will be a flare in the fall. The question is, how severe will it be? There's four other coronaviruses that have circulated in society for decades, and they are seasonal. They flare every winter season. And collectively, those four coronaviruses constitute about 25% of the cases of the common cold. This will become the fifth seasonal coronavirus, maybe the most dangerous of those coronaviruses. So hopefully the vaccine is going to encompass the variant that is projected to flare in the fall, in which case it could look like what Dr. Gottlieb describes is an otherwise sort of bad flu season. That may be what we brace for. We may not call for universal masking. We may call for selective masking for those with symptoms or exposures or high risk. We may call for universal masking in the fall. We may ask people to distance. We're going to see. We're going to follow this carefully. But I did talk to Scott Gottlieb, and he said, Marty, great article in the Wall Street Journal. I come out a little differently on the numbers, but the principle is correct, and I agree with it. So that was good affirmation that and you're seeing other things come out now in The Atlantic, and other experts are saying, late spring, we should see a significant slowing.
We're looking at COVID-19 in the U.S. and the road to herd immunity. Our guest says late April is looking pretty good. Dr. Marty Makary is from the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, Public Health and Business. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of our guest's argument, what you've heard from him so far? What questions do you have about herd immunity, vaccines, natural immunity from having caught COVID-19 and lived to tell the tale? And how is this changing your behavior? Are you still masking up? Are you still being careful? What do you look ahead for in the summer? 800-642-1234 is the number. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're getting an update on the state of the pandemic here in the U.S. Our guest wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal saying we're on track to achieve herd immunity by late April, allowing us to return in many ways to a normal life. Dr. Marty Makary is a professor at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, Public Health and Business. He's the author of the book, The Price We Pay, What Broke American Healthcare and How to Fix It. You can join in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Tom is with us in Milwaukee. Tom, hello.
Hello. With five different types of virus that you just mentioned going around, I'm wondering if it might be wise to wear a mask most of the time, most places.
Tom, thanks a lot for the call. You were talking about the five different coronaviruses, not five types of COVID-19, Dr. Makary. But, you know, that reminds me, we were worried about coronavirus, COVID-19 plus flu. Wearing masks seems to have done a number on our flu season this year and kept it really low. Yeah, I'm thinking I might want to wear a mask on the bus come fall and winter. What do you think about the future of how we're going to deal with masks?
Yeah, you know, one of the silver linings of the pandemic has been that we're finally going to take basic infection protocol mitigation seriously. That is, it'll never be acceptable again, I think, in our lifetime to show up to work and sit next to somebody coughing, sneezing, slobbering, and hacking, and then shake their hand, right? That kind of stuff now we've recognized is bad practice for the regular seasonal flu. So that's why when we got smart about COVID, we also saw a near elimination of seasonal flu, not quite, but almost at record low levels. And one of the silver linings, I think, here is that we will finally take flu seriously. The country in the past has been oddly complacent about seasonal flu deaths. 81,000 4 years ago, by the way, people died from seasonal flu in that 1 year. So I think we'll probably use a selective masking policy. If you've seen somebody in the grocery store say, 2 years ago, wearing a mask, chances are they were Asian, because in Asian cultures, it's been accepted. It's a norm that if you have any symptoms or were around somebody that had symptoms or you're high risk, you may just want to wear a mask during a viral season. And so that is a good practice that I think we're going to see people do on a voluntary basis.
Thanks for the call, Tom. We'll go to Kathleen in Delavan now. Kathleen, hi.
Hello, good afternoon. So my question is, if you had the virus and you got your first flu shot, I'm reading in the New York Times that they're thinking you really don't need to take the second one, which I really don't want to do.
Yeah, I think you're talking about the coronavirus COVID shot.
Yep.
Yeah. And so the first dose is very effective. So effective, I hesitate to even say how effective it is because people may not get the second dose at all. And we want people to get the second dose because it increases the duration of that immunity. And next fall or a couple of years from now, that may be very important to have that durable long-term immunity. You get about almost 100-fold more antibodies with that second dose. I mean, you get a real surge. So it's important. I would just personally recommend that people delay that second dose while we're supply constrained, as seniors are sitting ducks right now in this war and they're dying. I personally think if we focused on the first dose and delayed the second dose, as the UK is doing now as a national policy, we would save more lives. Plus, those who had the infection, confirmed that is, should probably step aside in the vaccine line and let others go first and then get it later when we're less supply constrained.
Thanks a lot for that call, Kathleen. Valerie joins us next in Madison. Valerie, hi.
Hi, can you hear me?
loud and clear. What did you want to bring up, Valerie?
Okay, thanks. So I have two sons. One is 20 and one will be 12 in April. And I'm just concerned about when they might be able to get vaccinated, especially my younger son.
You said 12 for the younger son, Valerie?
He will be 12 in April.
Gotcha. So younger folk are getting vaccinated, Dr. McCary. I know they're largely much less vulnerable to this particular disease.
That's right. They're very low risk, both of the consequences and of transmission. Now, I can give you a little piece of good news. For kids that are healthy, there has yet to be a formal report of a death of a child who has been completely healthy from coronavirus. Matter of fact, we know a kid is at least 10 times more likely to die of suicide than they are from coronavirus, which is why we're pushing to have these schools reopen in person. But right now, the vaccine is only available for kids over age 16. There's a new trial that's underway to look at its effectiveness in kids down to age 12. We may never see a vaccine soon for kids younger. We'll have to see. Those studies have yet to be performed.
Thanks a lot for that call, Valerie. As we wrap up in just our last minute, Dr. McCary, what are you watching for next?
Well, I think one of the epidemics that predated COVID that we have not been talking about that we need to talk about is loneliness, and it's affecting health outcomes. Our goal should not just be to fight the virus. It should be to improve health and health outcomes. And we've got to address these secondary fallout issues that in part come from some of the mitigation. The school district that had 18 suicides and decided they have to reopen, that closing was a bad idea. These are the issues that we've got to address now: the mental illness, substance abuse, deferred medical care, and the frailty. Loneliness kills people. It affects your physiologic reserves. And this was a problem pre-COVID. It's been magnified during COVID. So we've got to rebuild communities, reestablish a human touch, hug people, be with our families. Look, I'm a cancer surgeon. I can tell you the power of touching a patient when they're scared. It is powerful. So that's what we need to start rebuilding as we transition back to some normal life this summer, ahead of what will be, you know, a cautious time during the fall, but we'll be able to manage that based on the data we have at the time.
Dr. McCary, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That's Dr. Marty McCary from Johns Hopkins. He wrote a piece in the Wall Street Journal saying that COVID-19 will be much less of a threat in the U.S. by April, most likely allowing us to start to resume normal life.